Good afternoon, and welcome to Reminiscing, a program of nostalgia and recollections of the good old days, times that we remember as happy and maybe a little simpler. We know we can't go back, but we certainly can reminisce. This is your volunteer reader, Mary Ellen Stepanek, and you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, your 24-hour reading station. Good afternoon, and welcome to Reminiscing. Today, I'm going to read stories from the Good Old Days magazine about Valentine's. Yes, Valentine's Day is coming up this weekend. Be sure to get plenty of candy on hand. This first story is entitled Mrs. Simmons' Shady Scheme. The end justified the means. This was sent in by Audrey Korn. Mrs. Alice Simmons arrived in her fifth grade classroom at 8:40 on the morning of February 14, 1950. She carried a Woolworth bag in one hand and her pocketbook in the other. Mrs. Simmons had important work to do. The task would require just a few minutes of her time, but she needed to finish the job before her students arrived at 9 a.m. Mrs. Simmons had dreamed up today's shady scheme last Valentine's Day. It was back then that her friend, Jean Matthews, had described a heartbreaking situation involving a shy, quiet little girl named Tessie O'Brien. Mrs. Matthews taught fourth grade. The way she described it, Tessie's classmates did not bully Tessie, they simply ignored her. Mrs. Matthews felt sad, but not entirely surprised when Tessie received only three cards in the fourth grade's Valentine's box. Tessie's more popular classmates got 20 cards, one from every child in the class. Mrs. Simmons knew that Tessie would be promoted to her fifth grade classroom the following year. Mrs. Simmons was a kind-hearted woman. She made herself a promise. Next February 14th, Tessie O'Brien would receive lots of Valentine cards. Mrs. Simmons was not a woman who broke promises. So early the following February, she visited the nearby Woolworth store on 13th Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. "I want to buy several packages of your Valentine cards," Mrs. Simmons told the sales lady. Mrs. Simmons was not trying to save money. She knew that for her plan to succeed, the Valentine cards for Tessie must look exactly like the inexpensive cards that the other fifth graders dropped into her classroom's Valentine's box. The sales lady showed Mrs. Simmons a package of cards that sold for 10 cents. "Our most popular Valentines," the sales lady explained. "I'll take three packages," Mrs. Simmons said. At home, she riffled through the Valentine cards. Each package contained one Valentine addressed to my teacher. Alice Simmons grew up poor. She believed that waste was sinful. However, she reminded herself that a child's happiness was at stake. Mrs. Simmons threw away the three "to my teacher" cards. Then Mrs. Simmons brewed herself a pot of tea and sat down to address the 27 remaining cards, all to Tessie O'Brien. Of course, Mrs. Simmons needed to disguise the fact that Tessie's 27 cards came from one person, not to mention the fact that that one person was her fifth grade teacher. Children were smart. Mrs. Simmons needed to be even smarter. She thought back to her own girlhood. Her classmates had disguised the handwriting on their Valentine cards. For the next 2 hours, Mrs. Simmons addressed some cards in huge capital letters. She scrawled other cards in small, pinched cursive writing. Mrs. Simmons used blue ink and black ink, ordinary number two pencils, and red pencils. One card was addressed with a pink crayon, and another with a purple crayon. Then came the task of writing a brief message inside each card. Again, Mrs. Simmons thought back to her own fifth grade self. Soon, Mrs. Simmons was busy writing Guess Who, Your Secret Pal, Love Ya, Be My Valentine, Happy V-Day, Kiss Me, Sugar Is Sweet and So Are You, Be Mine, Yours Till Niagara Falls, and even an occasional swack, sealed with a kiss, for you folks out there who have forgotten yesterday's clever codes. Tessie O'Brien's cards took a lot of time and thought, but Mrs. Simmons decided that the results were worth the effort. She looked at the clock over her classroom door. She had just 15 minutes until her students arrived. Mrs. Simmons began to push Tessie's valentines, one by one, through the slot at the top of the big valentine box on her desk. She completed the job in less than 5 minutes. "I must remember to shake the box before I distribute the cards," Mrs. Simmons reminded herself. Years of working with fifth graders had taught Mrs. Simmons that children notice the smallest details. Tessie's classmates would grow suspicious if all Tessie's cards were bunched at the top of the valentine box. At 9 a.m., Mrs. Simmons stood outside her classroom door, greeting each student just as she did every day. The morning dragged by. No one cared about fractions or the products the United States imported from Brazil. Mercifully, all lessons were canceled after lunch. Mrs. Simmons took a vote. The decision was unanimous. Valentine cards first. Heart-shaped cookies and Kool-Aid would come second. Mrs. Simmons remembered to shake the Valentine box. Then she untaped the lid and began to call the names on the envelopes. Tessie O'Brien's name came up frequently. After all the Valentines were distributed, the children ran from desk to desk to look at their classmates' cards. There was much guessing about who sent which card to whom. Was it from a boy? The girls wondered. The boys pretended not to care. But oh my goodness, they were terrible actors. Tessie O'Brien's desk caused the most oohs and ahs. Shy, quiet Tessie had received more Valentines than any other fifth grade girl or boy. Tessie sat at her desk and looked at her pile of cards and listened to her classmates squeal their astonishment. Tessie was not accustomed to so much attention. But as Mrs. Simmons noted, Tessie was a fast learner. When the dismissal bell rang at 3 p.m., Tessie O'Brien walked out of the classroom surrounded by four chattering girls. And the miracle was, Tessie was laughing and giggling just like the others. Mrs. Simmons, my wonderful aunt, who told me this story many years ago, smiled and folded away her Woolworth bag. She put on her hat and coat and locked her classroom door. Today had been a very happy Valentine's Day. This was Mrs. Simmons' Shady Scheme by Audrey Korn. This next Valentine's Day story is entitled Boxed In. What happened to the last Valentine card? This was sent in by Lewis Coker. Approaching Valentine's Day, 1964, the kids in my kindergarten class were in a frenzy of excitement. Each of us had joyously decorated our own shoebox with white paper colored with our ever-present Crayolas, as well as paper hearts that our teacher taught us to make by cutting an ear from a folded piece of red construction paper. John Deal Elementary School in Erie, Pennsylvania, was awash with red paper hearts. It was nice to feel hope and excitement in the air. The previous year had ended on a frightful note with President Kennedy's assassination in November. By February 1964, things were struggling back to normalcy. Ironically, just as kindergarten would be our happy, innocent pathway forward, our nation was losing its own innocence. Drugs, violence, and protests were just around the corner, and here we sat, untouched by any of it so far. We were comfortably stuck in the middle. 1963 was in the past, and cultural revolution in the future. Unfazed by either, we kids cut out our paper hearts and went shopping with our moms to buy Valentine cards. Our teacher had sent us home with a note telling each parent how many children were in the classroom so that no one would be left out. Each child would put their decorated shoebox, now a Valentine's Day mailbox, on the windowsill in alphabetical order by last name. Then, one at a time, a child would have his or her turn to go up and deposit Valentine's. The teacher also told us to put our names on the back of the cards so that classmates would know from whom the card came. Yes, in kindergarten, we all knew how to at least print our first name in scratchy, wobbly handwriting using crayons that were about the size of a plumber's heavy-duty wrench. The day finally came. We sat on the rug in excited anticipation as teacher called us up one by one to put our boxes on the sill. Thus began a school ritual that I learned to really hate over the years, calling you up in alphabetic order by last name. As a K, I had to learn to be patient in spite of myself. At last, it was my turn. I was so happy when I dropped a Valentine into each box as I admired the way each person had decorated his or hers. I really got into the holidays when I saw decorations, and I still do. I smiled as I dropped card by card into box after box. Then, horrors, Mom had miscounted, and I was one card short. Poor Jimmy Zinn wasn't going to get a card from me. What do I do? I felt a mixture of embarrassment and anger at Mom for messing up like this. I thought of opening up a box from someone else and taking my card back to give to Jimmy. Teacher intervened in time, telling me, "If you're done with the cards, please sit down so the next person can go." Red-faced now for two reasons, not having enough cards and being asked by the teacher to sit down, I went back to the rug, fuming. I couldn't wait to get home and tell Mom what she had done. Our kindergarten being a half-day school, the moms picked us up at noon. On the way home, I told Mom how embarrassed I was because I didn't have enough cards. She apologized profusely as she threw out suggestions. Had I counted wrong? No. Did I accidentally drop two cards in someone's box? Maybe. By the time we were home, I couldn't wait to see all the cards. Mom opened the box and spilled them out on the table. We started to go through them together, and she would ask me to tell her a little something about each playmate who had his or her name on the back of a card. All of a sudden, she turned a card over, read the back, and started to laugh. Uh-oh, that can't be good. "Louie," she laughed, "you gave yourself a card. Look." Sure enough, there was my name on the back of the card, signed by me. There was no other Lewis in the entire school. An older me would have said something like, "Of course, love yourself first, to thine own self be true." But that still wouldn't have covered it. The fact remained, I was an idiot. After all these years, I still have this nagging question. I wonder how many other students had stiffed poor Jimmy the same way. Well, happy Valentine's Day. This was Boxed In by Lewis Coker. Here's a little bit of information about Valentine's Day. It's in an item entitled Heart to Heart. Anyone can be passionate, but it takes real lovers to be silly. That was said by Rose Franken. This little item was written by Georgia Cohart, who also has some recipes for Valentine's Day. She says, Valentine's Day arose from an ancient Roman festival celebrating spring and fertility. That's where we got the romance part, along with Cupid, the pink-cheeked, arrow-toting Roman god of love. The early church removed the most heathenish aspects from the revelry by turning the pagan holiday into a feast honoring Saint Valentine. No matter its origins, what would be more welcome in bleak midwinter than fresh flowers, sweet cherubs, and sending and receiving glittery cards? Oh, and don't forget the chocolate. In elementary school each year, I happily anticipated creating a stunning Valentine's Day mailbox and choosing Valentines for my classmates. The silly puns and corny messages place much emphasis on the birds and the bees, with classics like, "Honey, be my Valentine," "Too good to be forgotten," and "Be my tweet Valentine." My taste leans strongly toward comedy rather than romance. It still does. Elsewhere in the heartland at that same time, my husband-to-be faced with dread the pile of Valentines to be signed and stuffed into ill-fitting envelopes. Knowing he still had to tackle the conversion of his dad's shoebox into a mail receptacle only deepened his despair. Fortunately for me, his dislike of grade school Valentine's Day rites didn't taint his outlook as an adult. This introduction was written by Georgia Cohart, and she goes on to give recipes for Valentine's Day. Looking at the pictures, my favorite is chocolate raspberry cream puffs. Oh, just looking at it, I gained 10 pounds. This story is not about Valentine's Day, but it is about love. It's entitled, "A Love as Sweet as Pie." It was high-priced, but mighty fine. This was sent in by Dixie Chipman Simpson. Some babies are discovered under cabbage leaves, although we all know the stork brings little bundles too. There are probably other ways, but I'm not sure about any of those except for my own arrival. Me, I came about via a cherry pie. That's right, a cherry pie. As far as I know, I might hold the title for that being the most unique way for a baby to arrive. When my mother was a young woman in the late 1930s, her first teaching position began in a one-room rural school about 30 miles from her parental home. She took room and board with the family, since it was not acceptable at that time for single women to live alone. Mother was quite happy with her accommodations because the family was large and three of the girls were close to Mother's age. It so happened that one of the girls was keeping company, a term used then for dating, with a fellow from a neighboring town. This beau had a younger brother, and he asked the younger one if he wanted to go along one evening when he was going courting. They were going to the school, which was having a pie supper. In those days, pie suppers tended to be popular events. Their goal was to raise money for the school, but they also doubled as social festivities for the community. Usually, the school children presented a program to coincide with the supper, and that drew even more people. At a pie supper, men bid on the pies that the ladies had contributed. After a man made his purchase, he got to sit with the lady baker and have a conversation with her as they enjoyed the pie. The men could buy any pie they wanted if they were willing to bid the highest. The highlight of a pie supper was always bidding on the teacher's pie. A big fuss was made over her pie. Naturally, the older brother was going to buy the pie made by the girl he was sweet on. His younger brother, though, wasn't sparking with anyone at the time. That's another old term for dating. Younger brother hadn't bid on any pie yet by the time the teacher's pie came up, and I suppose he was getting hungry. It was announced that the teacher's pie was cherry, and that was his favorite. Miss Martha, the teacher, held her pie high in the air. He looked at the teacher, and he looked at the pie. I wonder if his stomach didn't growl and his heart didn't go pitty-pat. He began to bid. No one there knew him, and the men decided to have fun, running up the bids. It grew higher and higher, but he didn't back down. Probably by that time, he was without a doubt showing off a bit, and his determination prevailed. I learned years later that he had paid an utterly ridiculous amount for one cherry pie. And that, folks, is how my papa met my mama. Serendipity at its finest. Through the years, Mother made many a cherry pie. I can remember that when I was growing up, Daddy would take the first bite, smile a bit of a flirty smile, get a twinkle in his eye, and say, "Mighty fine pie, Miss Martha, mighty fine pie." I'm sure it evoked special memories for them both as the beginning of their love story. This was A Love as Sweet as Pie by Dixie Chipman Simpson. Now, this next love story is not necessarily about a person. It's entitled First Real Love. Both relationships were fruitful. The story is by Robert Walters as told to Diane Kluster. It was 1956, and this young man's fancy was cars and girls. I had just started a relationship with the love of my life, a 1950 Ford sedan. She was sleek, she was shiny, and she was lovely. Sadly, at that time, the only people to share her front seat with me were my buddies. One night, a buddy and I were enjoying an evening drive. I stopped at a red light, looked to my left, and there was a most beautiful scene. Another 1950 Ford sedan with two lovely girls in the front seat. I motioned for them to pull over, and they did. I went up to my girl and motioned for her to roll down the window. She complied, but only by about 12 inches, no more. She would not give me her name or phone number. I quickly reached in, grabbed her wallet, found her license, and memorized her name and address. She was not happy, so I threw the wallet back into the car, and that beautiful Ford with the lovely lady quickly drove off. I was now a young man with a plan. I found her phone number and called to ask her for a date. She agreed, but only if the date started with the church service and ended at her home with her parents. Apparently, the fact that I also drove a Ford did not improve her opinion of me. I figured she had the Ford and I had nothing to lose, so why not? After that date in church, we went out together for 18 months before I was drafted into the Army in August 1958. We enjoyed our time together and our matching cars. I sold my beautiful Ford before I left for the Army, but I still had my girl and her Ford. The night before I left for basic training, my girl, her Ford, and I went to the beach to say our goodbyes. It was a special evening, until the ride home, when I totaled her car. Now I was leaving my lovely girl without a car, and both the Ford sedans were no more. But the story does have a happy ending. This lovely girl waited for me and became my wife after I returned from the Army. We've been married for 60 happy years. We have added 4 children, 11 grandchildren, and 15 great-grandchildren to our family. In 2012, I purchased a 1950 Ford sedan identical to the ones my girl and I owned. That Ford now mostly sits in our garage, but it comes out for parades and car shows. And most important, it comes out on Friday nights, when I still take my favorite girl out for date night. I have my first love back, and I have my first real love by my side. Not bad, not bad at all. This was First Real Love by Robert Walters, and there's a picture of Robert with his real love, his wife Mildred, but he does also happen to be standing in front of his other love, his shiny black Ford. And I must tell you, when I was a junior and senior in high school, I won't tell you what year that was, but I had a shiny black 1954 Ford. Now here is a response by readers to the editor's question, what was your favorite game to play with your siblings? Here's one answer. We played a made-up game that we called Lost in Space, just like the TV show from the 1960s. We played in an old chicken coop way down back of our childhood home. Our dad made us a control panel out of heavy cardboard with radio and TV knobs. My brothers and I would take turns calling out on this makeshift control panel, and we'd act all frightened at meteors or alien ships in the area. My brother Danny or I would run and knock over the old couch that we sat on, yelling, "Meteors, meteors," or "Alien ship approaching." Boy, do I miss those days. This answer was sent in by Sylvia Brown of Westfield, New York. And here's another response. My favorite game to play with my siblings was hide and seek. After dinner, and the dishes were done and the kitchen was cleaned up, we were allowed to go outside until dark. We had a street light in front of our house, and that was our goal post. When the light went on, we had to go inside. We played night after night with the neighbor kids, too. Oh, the good old days. And this was sent in by June Jankowski of Burbank, Illinois. Well, that's it for today. I hope you have a happy Valentine's Day this February 14th. And thank you again for joining me on this program this afternoon. You've been listening to Reminiscing on Sun Sounds of Arizona, Arizona's 24-hour reading station. This is your volunteer reader, Dr. Mary Ellen Stepanek, wishing you good afternoon and good memories.